Yo, what's going on?
Hey, Mr. Palace here. Welcome to the Founding Members Club Call.
Yeah, we got a little interesting scenario going on right now. I'm actually in transit for this call. So Brad is actually in a different spot than I am today. So you may hear that my microphone is a little bit funky. You may hear me honk my horn at people. Imagine me flipping someone off. No, I'm just kidding. I'm a very nonviolent driver, as far as you guys know.
Basically the same as every other Founding Members Club call. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, exactly. Except it's going to be less high-quality microphoneage here.
Yeah.
Well, good, man. Thank you guys so much for coming back on the call. Thanks, Brad, for helping me set this up. This is kind of complicated, but we'll make it work. Today we're going to be talking about a topic that we've been sort of breezing over the past few weeks, and we're going to solidify a lot of the stuff that we talked about since the beginning of this month, and that topic is rapport. Now, of course, we have lots and lots and lots of stuff to cover, as always, but what's more important than the topic typically at hand are your questions to me. So if we're in the middle of the topic and it's going on smoothly, but you have a question and you want that question to get answered, please, by all means, ask that question so we can continue and I can get to you and I can get all the things you may have questions around cleared up. That way you can sort of progress and push forward. It's very expensive to get me on the phone to hear me talk to you one-on-one. So part of the benefit of being a founding member is that you get to do that 3 times a month for free, of course, just for being a member. So you want to make sure that you take advantage of that as much as possible. Now, there are two ways to do it. One is to press *2, I believe, right, Brad?
Yep, that's correct.
Okay, *2 on your telephone if you're listening like I am today via phone. Then you can press *2, and that will raise your hand, and Brad will see it, and Brad will basically unmute you whenever it's time to talk. And then I'll chat with you that way one-on-one. Everyone can obviously hear, but you can talk directly to me. And then the other way is if you are listening in via the website, then you want to go ahead and submit your questions in the question box to the left-hand side of the page, and you should be able to they should fall right into a Q&A, actually a question and answer queue. I don't want to say a Q&A queue, but it'll fall right in line, and we will be able to answer those in the order that we get them, which is typically how we do it. So any questions at all that you've had over the past, almost 2 weeks now or so, since our last call? And so anything in the past couple of weeks that you had that popped up, go ahead and drop those in. Brad is going to sort of flag me down as questions roll in, and sort of we'll go through it that way. That way we can get all the questions answered that you guys have. So
we've got 2 questions so far. So that's awesome. You guys just keep submitting your questions as you have them.
Right. Okay. Cool. And we'll get to the first question in a bit here. But first, I want to go over a couple of things, and I just want to briefly breeze over what it is that we talked about before. Give everybody up to speed in case you're a new member and this is your first call. And sort of tell you a little bit about what I'm going to be revealing today and the kind of detail I'll be going over. The first is that today's topic is rapport. Rapport is, unfortunately for a lot of guys, rapport is a necessary element in the process of sort of being a badass with women in general. Understanding how to sort of open up and reveal yourself and make an emotional connection with the woman you just met is extremely powerful and extremely effective more than anything. It will get women to absolutely fall in love with you, which is what rapport does with anybody. So we build rapport with lots of people. We build rapport with other guys. Like, those are our friends. We do that naturally. We build rapport with women that we feel very close with. Our family typically has a level of rapport with us, sometimes not recent rapport, but, either way. There's some level of rapport. And the reason why we have such that strong connection with these people is because we are literally becoming vulnerable around them, and they are not taking advantage of that vulnerability. That's really what rapport is. Rapport is a direct transfer of emotion from one person to another, but more importantly, it is that transfer happens while you're vulnerable as a person. So you sort of reveal your emotions to someone, and how you feel about something. And the natural tendency, the big fear from most guys is that they're going to be attacked in that moment. Now, I found a few things to be absolutely true and about rapport and very helpful about rapport, but a couple of things that I didn't expect when I first started studying this topic that sort of led me to the place where I could control interactions with people to a level of really, you know, let's say the government special ops level. Let's start with that level. And that came from my ability to create this massive amount of rapport with people that I've connected with. So, you know, where on one end, on one side, a guy's really scared to do it typically, I implore you to really pay attention during this time. Get a pen, get a piece of paper, and or, you know, if you get a Word document open on your computer, go ahead and pull that document up now, because I'm going to be going over some stuff that's going to really change your life if and when you apply it. When I first started studying rapport, I got into it because I was noticing that, you know, we have essentially in the beginning of an interaction, everything's very lighthearted and fun, and at some point, the conversation sort of shifts naturally. And what I noticed is that whenever I personally would shift the conversation to saying something serious, I got mixed reactions from women. So I didn't know if it was something that I was doing wrong, if I shouldn't be serious, or if I was doing it too early, too late. So I started breaking it all down and trying to figure out and testing. And what I found out was that at a specific time in an interaction where you have to go into rapport, meaning you have to make some kind of a connection with the woman on a real basis, not like a playful, bantery, kind of silly, you know, kind of basis. That's what most guys, when you see a player and you see a guy like being really just, the guy is really, really good with women, you know, maybe even in a bad way, like a player's got like a bad connotation, then what you would typically see as a, you know, that process is a guy seducing a woman and a guy hitting on a woman, but never a guy really connecting with a woman, because that's typically done one-on-one and not in front of other people. And so a lot of guys getting into this, myself included, end up assuming that connection is not a very big part of this process of you know, attracting women and being a complete badass woman. So whenever I first started realizing that this connection is a part, it kind of threw me for a loop here, and I was really caught off guard. And so when I started studying it, I really dove headfirst into it. And what I found, again, like I was saying, is that there are certain stages of an interaction, and if you don't bring rapport into that specific stage, you can have a problem that can happen later on. So let me talk about the first two problems. One is that if you jump into rapport too early, say that one. The second one is going into rapport too late, or skipping rapport altogether. So jumping into rapport too early is what guys do as a default when they go out and they want to meet women. This is our default conversation mode. It's like if you've ever met somebody, or if you are the kind of guy who thinks, well, you know what, I don't really want to play the game, you know, I don't want to play games. I just want to be honest and be upfront, and I want to talk to a woman and just tell her how I feel and tell her I want her, and that's what I want to do. I don't want to play games. Well, if that's the way you're thinking, it's very likely, very, very likely, that when you have a conversation with a woman, you're going to jump to rapport very quickly. The reason why that happens is because when you think about not playing a game, the game part of the interaction is the attraction part. It's the part where, you know, you are being playful, you're bantering, you're joking around, you're turning your back, you're using negative body language, you're building social proof, social value, you're demonstrating your value, and you're running a room. These are all different qualities and tools that you can use in order to create attraction. We'll go over a lot of those. We have an upcoming live seminar in Vegas. By the way, if you haven't signed up for that, you need to do that now, because founding members get in for free. So if you can make it, go ahead and sign up for it. You can email brad@thedialofbadass.com, and he'll set you up with a ticket to it. It's in Vegas. We will be selling out in that event. And we're going over all of the tools of attraction. So it's called Attraction in Action. And it's all about approach. It's all about using different techniques to approach different women, and what to say when you walk up, how to move your body. Everything's demonstrated. It's going to be very, very in-depth. So that part of the process, a lot of guys focus on for a very long period of time, but only because they found out that's what their problem is. Most guys just the average guys don't know that there are different stages to an interaction. Don't know that when you first walk up, you've got to play a little bit of the game. You have to sort of go through the process of attraction, the attraction stage. So
you
guys jump straight into rapport. Go ahead. Yep.
There's one thing too that I know I've experienced, which sort of misled me in this thinking of, you know, being like that whole I don't want to play games mentality, was that I've heard women say a lot of times, like, that they want some, you know, they like it when a man can just walk up and just be honest about it. Like, they say that they don't want to play a game either, you know? And if guys have ever heard somebody, a woman say that, then it's going to be like, oh, okay, so that's what women are really thinking. But, so have you experienced that as well? Have you heard that from a lot of women?
Yeah, well, one of the things that I found out as soon as I started studying this stuff is that I had to stop listening to what women said. Because women typically, when they give advice to saying what they want from a guy, they're not talking about or considering the very beginning of the interaction. They're considering a relationship with a guy. Because women don't really care about the beginning of an interaction with a man. What they care about more, much, much more, are keeping a relationship with a guy. So if you did research to find out what women are searching for on Google, you'd find an overwhelming number of women that are searching for how to keep a man interested in you. That's what women are looking for. How do I keep a man interested in me? Right? Now, what are men searching for? How do I fuck her? You know?
Mm-hmm.
How do I get laid? That's what guys are searching for. Or what do I say when I walk up? These are specific things that guys want to know. Now, women want to know how to keep a relationship going. Men want to know how to make a relationship start. So when women answer that question, when they're saying, I want a guy who can X, Y, Z, you know, who can treat me right, who's honest, I don't want to play games, she's talking about playing games in a relationship. She's not talking about playing games in an interaction in the beginning. If women didn't want to play games, I swear to God, we wouldn't do it as guys. Because it's a lot of damn work, you know? I mean, it's like, it's a lot of focus, it's a lot of studying, a lot of being better, like a lot of getting rejected. Guys would be much happier to walk up and go, hey, look, you know, I don't want to play games with you. You're really hot. Let's go out sometime. She'd be like, you know, I really appreciate that. Let's go out. And that's how it worked. Then, guys, just hang up the phone right now, go to a bar, and get laid. Because it's easy then, if that's the case. The truth is, though, women do not want that. They don't want a guy to walk straight up and just spill his guts to her immediately. And the reason why she doesn't want that is because guys spill their guts and they lie. Some guys do. So women then become very closed off and they're resentful and they're scared. So they put up all these different games that they play, and we have to pass these tests and play these games with women in order to actually attract them. Now, there are times in which women will not play games. For example, during day game, if you're meeting women during the daytime, you'll probably run into a situation where you realize a lot of women are more receptive to just open, straight-up, direct conversation, direct hitting on a woman directly and then going into rapport pretty quickly. That's a lot easier during the daytime. But at nighttime, women have their guard up a little bit more because they get hit on a lot at nighttime because guys get more balls when they go out to a bar and they start drinking. So if you're out at a bar, you're competing. You're not competing with the other dudes in the bar. You're competing with every guy she's ever had approach her, ever. So you have to stand out, like, big time. Not just be the best in the bar, but be the best, period, that she's run into. And part of that is knowing that there is a process that we have to go through. And so being inauthentic, and I get that, Brad, I totally get that. And actually just had a conversation for about 2 hours with somebody about something really similar. You know, I got a private phone coaching client who had a similar concept. It's all about rapport, but he had a little bit of a different question that he had that he wanted to get answered. But nonetheless, Brad, you and I have talked about this, where, you know, you get into an interaction with a woman, and the tendency to, the desire to lay all your cards on the table and just be like, look, this is what I want, and not play the game in the beginning is very, very strong. That's a very strong desire. But whenever you skip that stage, that stage in the beginning is a stage that creates curiosity. The reason why it's important is because if she's not curious about you, she doesn't care where you're from, who you are, you know, that you think she's hot.
How well you can take care of her, that
exactly.
You think she's beautiful.
Yeah. And you know, and that you're a good guy.
Yeah.
She doesn't care about stuff. She doesn't care. Because she does not trust you yet. She's not curious about you. She doesn't want to know yet. So you have to create that desire in a woman, and that's what attraction is all about. If you missed anything on attraction, you can go back and listen to the Founding Members Club calls from the, who was it, from the last two were reports, so the ones before that were all attraction. So you can go
or come
and,
to
and
Vegas.
That, what's that?
Or come to Vegas.
Vegas, right. Right. Well, I think you should do both, really, because it'll prep you for the stuff of Vegas. If you're going to go to the Vegas event and you're going to email Brad at thedallabass.com now and just say, hey, I want in, and that's it, and Brad will get back to you and fill you in the details. If you do want to do that, then you're definitely going to want to check out the interviews first that we did from earlier founding member calls, because you want to be up to speed when you show up, and you don't want to show up kind of, you know, behind everybody else. So, continuing on, though, the tendency, like you're saying, Brad, for a lot of guys to shun the attraction stuff and jump straight to rapport is very strong. I had it too. I didn't want to play the game either. I wanted to just jump straight in and be real, you know, and do that, build rapport. But here's the problem with that. The guys who do that naturally, who go to a bar and just, like, talk to women and go straight in rapport, those guys are considered nice guys to women. Nice guys are guys that women could marry but would never sleep with their date. They're good marriage material, but the women who want to hook up and want to hang out and are the ones that are going to sleep with you are not going to be looking for a man to marry. If a woman is looking for a man to marry, she's not going to a fucking bar. You know, she's going to go online and search through eHarmony or something, you know, for marriage material dude, because it's just too much work to find a good guy at a bar. So any guy that walks up in the beginning, he doesn't understand. If you walk up to a woman who's like in a social environment and you don't understand that she is not looking for a good guy, she's looking for a guy she can hook up with, a guy who's confident, a guy who's not going to make her feel like she's doing things wrong. She's looking for someone to walk her through the seduction process, to really get, like, to cradle her, really, through this process. You have to have a lot of power and a lot of experience as a man in order to do that. So guys who have a lot of experience naturally follow the process I'm going to tell you about now. Guys who don't do it wrong, they skip attraction, they jump straight into rapport. And that, by the way, is what causes you to fall into the friend zone. If you've ever been in the friend zone, it's because you didn't build enough attraction before you went into rapport. You went into rapport too fast, and typically it's because you're trying to be the nice guy, and then you land yourself in the friend zone. And that's obviously not very good. So you don't want to go into rapport too early. That's a big problem, and I'll tell you when to do it in a minute. And then you also don't want to skip rapport or go into rapport too late. Now, these are actually two different problems. If you go into rapport too late, that means you may have built attraction up a whole bunch, and then you started to see the attraction die off, and so now you're desperately trying to build some connection so that the attraction doesn't die. But if you start to go into rapport when she's losing interest, it can come across as extremely needy. And a lot of really hot women, really attractive women, will not be interested in that. Because as soon as you start to chase her in rapport and you show neediness, it kills the attraction you just built, and then you're starting from scratch again, which is not good. So that's what happens to go into it too late. But if you skip it all together, when you get a girl to the bedroom, let's say that you skip it all together, but you manage to get her home to your place. You know, you build a lot of attraction, you're being really light-hearted and fun, you're being very playful, and you get sexual, maybe you make out, let's say that, or you get a phone number, definitely. She's like, all right, let's go hang out, and you get her back to your place. As soon as you start to get sexual with her in a closed environment, she's going to start resisting like crazy. And you'll be flabbergasted. You'll be like, why? Well, I mean, I thought you wanted this. What, you want this? I mean, you were making out with me earlier. You gave me your number. You came to my house. Like, what else do I need to do for you to, you know, for you to sleep with me and first have a good sexual experience together? You know? And a lot of guys get really frustrated with that. The reason why that happens is because there's no rapport. And there is sexuality, but no rapport. So she doesn't trust you enough yet. Women have this thing called a red zone trigger, or red zone response, is another way of saying it. And a red zone response is a meter that all women have subconsciously when they're with a guy. And this meter sort of tells a woman, hey, it's okay to sleep with this guy because you can trust him and because you're turned on by him. Or, hey, I know you might be turned on by this guy, but you can't sleep with him because you don't know him or trust him. He could be bad for you, basically. So it's a self-protection mechanism that kicks in for women. That's called a red zone response or a red zone trigger. Now, what happens if you skip rapport altogether is that women have a really large red zone trigger, meaning that as soon as she gets sexually aroused and her emotional brain starts to take over, then she'll have a response naturally in her body that will kick her out of a seductive state and do what's called breaking state. So she's got a breaking state mechanism that will kick her out of being turned on and make her go cold all of a sudden and want to leave. And this is to protect her because she doesn't know if she can trust you or not yet. So the more rapport you build, the smaller this red zone area, this red zone response area gets. So you want to make her red zone really small so she feels comfortable enough to where you can be sexual. That's what has to happen in order to have sex, period. Now, not everything is about sex, but let's be honest, it's exciting to think that you can go through a system, through a process, and you, on the other side, there is sex, you know, and with really beautiful women. And it's the same for every woman. And that is absolutely true because I know that because I've studied and practiced it, and I didn't think it was real in the beginning, so I was really skeptical. But it is real, and it does work, which is really what I teach. And as long as you follow the process, it will work. You won't get out the other side. So regardless of whether or not you want a long-term relationship with this woman, a short-term relationship with this woman, if you want a one-night stand, which I think one-night stands are crappy because it's just not very fun for me. I'd much rather have a 30-night stand or a 90-night stand, you know, with several women or something, than a one-night stand with one girl. Usually the sex sucks, and usually you're not leaving her better than you found her, which is my motto, obviously. I definitely think that you should leave her better than you found her, regardless. So rapport is what solidifies that trust that allows you to make that transition from being just like, just the guy she met in a bar one time, to being the guy she's spending the night with, the guy that she's talking to in the morning, the guy she makes breakfast for, the guy she calls later, she's texting with, being like sending dirty pictures to. All of these different things are a result of two processes. One of sexual power and curiosity, and the other is rapport and trust. So, and those are both together, afterward together, in order for you to, in order for you to really see a response that's going to be positive for women. Brad, I have a question for you. Maybe you can,
yes.
Maybe you can answer this. Whenever you, I know you're big on rapport. I know that because I know you.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I know that you've pulled back, you spent some time in your life kind of pulling away from building rapport directly with women because you knew that you were going to have rapport too. What did you do to sort of, what was the process like for you whenever you were going from, oh man, you know, I go into rapport immediately or I try to connect too fast, you know, to figuring out the right time to go into it, you know? What was that process like for you? Because I know it was kind of a confusing process for a little while because I walked you through part of it. So I'm just kind of curious as to what you'd have to say about that.
Yeah, it was a little strange for me because I guess when I started, you know, learning about your system, I sort of didn't believe that I was the kind of guy who could be really playful. Like inside, I've always been very playful, but I always kind of, you know, fell into this role of being very like chill and very sort of, you know, the kind of consistently stable guy that everyone relies on. So I had that as part of my value. So I didn't see myself as like the fun or funny person. Like I wasn't naturally a funny, you know, extroverted person who wanted to talk to everybody. So for me, it was really a difficult exercise, but as soon as I started like really just trying attraction, I mean, I really couldn't imagine an interaction where I actually like just like force myself into attraction first, because I mean it happened sort of naturally. I would flirt with girls, but it was always in a context where I thought, well, I'm not going to be able to like, they're not going to want to be my friends anyways. So maybe I'll just flirt with them or whatever, and it's not going to go anywhere. But when I started actually using banner lines and playing with, body language and starting to just kind of bounce around the room and talk to whoever I wanted, it was really amazing because I realized that I am that person, you know, like I am the kind of person who can have fun wherever I go and be really social. And so I guess for me, the first step was kind of not worrying about rapport at all, I guess, which was, you know, swinging the pendulum a little bit too far the other way. But when I first started, it was very just talk to everybody and, be lighthearted and joke around and smile and laugh and dance and not worry about really making really strong connections or even going into seduction. So that was like my very first starting point, I would say. It was just kind of swinging the pendulum in the other direction a little bit too far. You know, I had to bring it back and start incorporating rapport and seduction into the interactions. But for me, that was the first step, was just kind of just going in the opposite direction from where I saw my natural tendencies.
Right, right. So you had to fight against that, you know?
Yeah.
It's funny because your natural tendency is not actually nature. When we say natural, a lot of us assume that what we mean is that we're wired this way. But we're not wired that way. We just become that way over time. So whenever you act outside of that, that behavior, your body automatically has this weird, like, whoa, what are you doing? Like, this isn't who you are, or, you know, this isn't what you do. This feels fake. Mm-hmm. And whenever, believe it or not, the stuff that you do that feels right, that feels good to you, at some point, the first time you did that, your body had the same reaction. You know, your body said, whoa, this isn't you. You know, this isn't who you are. This is fake. But you said, no, I'm going to do this. And you became that person. And now it feels like that is who you are all the time now, you know?
Yeah.
It's really interesting. So we're very, very malleable, you know? So much so that we don't see how easy it is for us to change our beliefs. So we get stuck on these beliefs for a very long period of time, and we find it very difficult to grow. Which is, you know, the way that I got past that for me is I had a mentor, you know? I had several mentors, so actually lots and lots of mentors. And I highly suggest that if you're on this, you know, since you're on this call now and you're listening, that, I mean, I'm you probably consider me a mentor in a lot of ways. Get closer to me if you can, in any way possible. Like, get on calls with me, get, ask questions and tell me your name on here. Get more personal with me, because the more mentors you have, on your side that have the answers to help you, the faster you succeed. And especially with, this is especially true with women. That's why my boot camps have such a high success rate, because I'm going out with guys directly saying, all right, this is what you did wrong, this is what you do right, try this now, and then watch the difference, you know? And it's a really powerful thing to be able to do. So rapport, essentially, though, in your case, Brad, you know, you had a desire to go into rapport, so did I. And I know guys who have a desire to stay away from rapport because it's kind of scary. They don't want to open up. They don't want to make that connection. And all of us are going to have to come to terms with the idea at some point, regardless of what your issue is around rapport, whether or not you like it a lot or maybe that you hate it, you don't want to do it. It's an integral and necessary part.
You can say that about every stage too, you know. Well, yeah. Obviously, except for seduction. I mean, I think everybody agrees that seduction is fun, you know.
Yeah, well, you don't have to convince somebody to have sex. You don't have to convince a guy to have sex with a hot chick, you know.
Right.
You know, like, hey, man, look. Let me tell you why you want to get laid.
Although, you know, plenty of guys are going to feel very uncomfortable when they get to the seductive stage.
Oh, of course.
You know?
Yeah, that goes without saying, you know. Because there's a lot of insecurities around the concepts, you know.
Mm-hmm.
What if you're not good enough? What if you screw it up? What if she laughs at you? What if, you know, what if she tells her friends bad things about you? What if, she gets halfway there and stops, you know. Who knows? You know, what if you do something embarrassing? It's all this, like, or what if, like, you have a sick fantasy you think she's not going to be into? There's a lot of weird stuff that we have around sex. you know? Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, there's going to be some strangeness around the seduction stage and sort of being, like, embodying your manhood and, like, piling in and driving into that head on is a really difficult thing to do for a lot of guys. So totally get that. But as far as rapport goes, though, you know, we've got a certain specific series of things we have to do as men. We have to go through these stages. For example, the guys who skip rapport altogether, for the most part, those guys will get laid every once in a while. So this is one of the bad things about following a system that's half created. If you have a system that doesn't put rapport in or in the right spot or in the proper way and you don't tackle it properly, then when it comes time to do it, you're not going to do it fully. And sometimes you'll get rewarded for not doing it properly, and then shit will blow up in your face. And it will keep on happening. Like, eventually you'll find yourself in your late 60s, alone, and you'll find it every single day of your life, it's harder and harder to meet women because you've been skipping rapport this whole time. Now that your fun, playful stuff isn't working as well as it used to because you're more mature, and women expect you to be more mature and more sort of worldly and knowledgeable and to have more experience with women. So they expect you to be able to make a connection and draw that out of her. So it sort of works against you in a lot of ways if you skip over it for a long period of time. So it's really important that you note that rapport isn't just like a thing I'm throwing in there saying, hey, you know, it's my personal opinion that you build rapport. It's not my fucking personal opinion. It's just fact. If you don't do it, you're going to have serious problems where you're not going to be able to progress later. It's not going to work. So you want to be able to master this.
It's interesting.
To look at it, you know?
It's interesting that, you know, both guys who are naturally very good at rapport and guys who naturally avoid rapport still need to find the middle ground, you know, like the perfect balance there, because even if you're naturally good at rapport, you're going to want to, like, jump into it. And then if you're avoiding it or you're jumping into it, either way is going to mess up interactions at a different point, so.
Right. And this is where it comes down to what the true description of someone who's a complete badass woman
exactly.
is savoir-faire. The master's question is when. When do I do this? Not how do I do it, not what do I do. You know, if you're asking how or what, you haven't mastered it yet. If you're asking when do I do this and when do I not do this, you're at a level of mastery, meaning that you're studying now to master an art, not to get okay at it, right? So you want to get to that point where you're asking when do I do this, when do I not do this, as soon as possible, because that allows you to step into mastery, the mastery level a lot faster. So there's that. And again, now I'm going to go over a couple of things real quick for rapport, just because I know that we tend to love talking. So I'm going to make sure that I go over the things that are necessary. But the things we talked about before is that rapport actually has four different stages. It's got light rapport, wide rapport, deep rapport, and release. Light rapport is where you're searching for a potential emotional connection with a woman. Wide rapport is where you found a couple of these connections. Like, you're not sure, you haven't made them yet, but you found a couple that you might want to make. Deep rapport is where you're actually making the emotional transfer from you to her and from her to you. Now, the interesting thing about deep rapport is that it's a two-way street. You can't build rapport with her and not feel more invested yourself. It doesn't work like that. As you begin to reveal and transfer emotion from you to her, you're going to like her more. It's going to happen. So if you are not sure whether or not you want to date a girl exclusively or whether or not this girl's some girl you even want to hang out with or hook up with, don't go into too much rapport when you're talking to her. You can go into some. Some is necessary. But don't go into too much. Don't go too deep. And I'll tell you about what too deep really means in a minute. But if you do go too deep, then she will love you and you will start to love her back, regardless of whether or not she's good for you or it's, you know, something that you actually even want. Like, if she's not that attractive and you want to end up with a woman who's much more physically attractive than the girl you're talking to, don't go into too much rapport. If you go into too much rapport after you've gone through attraction already, then you're going to start to feel like you choose your only option. That will happen. And it's really scary, but, you know, some guys, my friend Neil calls this one-itis. And I don't know if I agree with, like, the terminology, but it's really catchy. That's like where you meet a chick and she's the only chick in the world to you all of a sudden. Like, you know, what do you do? Do you just hook up this one chick and that's it and you stop growing? Like, it's because when you start to build rapport and you start to get accepted, the natural tendency for a guy is to go, I'm done, I did it, I figured all this out, I'm finished, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it feels good. It feels really good to do that. But you're not finished. You have to continue to grow. And so you have to choose. So eventually you're going to be choosing who falls in love with you. And this can be really strange. You know, it was really strange for me, too, to figure this out, to go through that. But the fourth stage is called release. It's where you drop the rapport conversation and you start over from scratch again if you want to continue and you want to build the cycle. Now, every time you go through this four-step process, you build love. If you do it enough, you can make a girl really, really deeply love you in a matter of 30, 40 minutes. Like, I'm telling you stuff I've never told anybody before. I can't believe I met a guy like you at a place like this, you know. Like, just really, really deep, 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 deep love for you. So if that's something that you want, let's say that you meet a girl, she's amazing. She's, like, just super smoking hot, super fun, beautiful personality. Everything about her is awesome, right? Then you may choose to go through attraction a bunch and then go into really deep rapport with her the first time you hang out with her. But you have to understand, though, the deeper you go, the more concerned she's going to be if she's only known you for about 30 minutes and she's telling you shit that she's never told anyone before. That's good, but if it keeps happening, she's going to start to feel like maybe there's something going on here. You know, maybe she's being manipulated or something. I've had women actually worry about this before. So eventually what I had to do was once I got into rapport with somebody, I had to start calling out that it was weird for me too. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Man, it's so weird that I get along with you so well. Like, I had to say that, right? Because if I didn't say that, she would go, it's really weird that I get along with you so well. And then she'd start going, almost, like, unnatural. Like, it's almost unnaturally, it's almost too good to be true,
mm-hmm.
you know? And when she starts to think that, your interaction's about to be over. She'll start to self-sabotage. Even if it's a great interaction, even if she really likes you a lot, she'll still self-sabotage because she's scared. Scared that you're using her or that something's going to pop up, it's going to go wrong, and she, you know, it's not going to work out. So you have to keep it somewhere within reality for her, you know? That's, we used to call that a blowing a woman out. So if you blow her out, that means that sort of she had this flame, you know, and because you had so much rapport with her, you blew the flame out. And that can happen. But that's a really, sort of a champagne problem, you know? Like a really high quality problem. When that means, oh man, a woman loved me so much that I screwed up the interaction. Okay, well, just tone it back a little bit and you'll be fine, you know?
Yeah.
You don't need to worry about, like, it's like you're starting from scratch there, so. But let's go through these four different stages briefly and then let's take some questions.
Yeah, we've got some questions building up, so.
Okay, actually, you know what? Let's go straight into the questions then, because we did actually go over the other stages of this process in the previous call. So let's go to some questions now.
Okay, I just got a question that's really, really just pertinent on topic. So I'm going to start off with that one from Jonathan. It says, is it okay to be lighthearted and flirty in light and wide rapport? Not the whole time, but if you find an opportunity to say something witty, like if you're seeing a girl for the second time and you want to speed up attraction.
Ah, so this is actually did Jonathan ask this a really good question last time too? I think he's asking some pretty amazing questions lately. This is a really good question. This is essentially what you're saying here. First off, that the second time that you meet up with the girl, what you do in the second time you meet up with her is entirely dependent upon what you did the first time you met up with her. You know, if you hung out with her the first time and you didn't really go into rapport very much or at all, you're going to be starting back from scratch in attraction. But if you did go into rapport the first time and you meet up there a second time, then yes, you can banter. You can banter in light and wide rapport. But you do not, as you're taking things deeper, you don't want to banter on the way down. So here's the sort of way that I would put it. If you are in light rapport, as in you're asking a question to her, right? And and she's like about to answer the question. She's about to give you like light rapport topics that you're going to be taking. If you're in the stage of light rapport, you can actually be joking a little bit. You can be like, oh, you know, what did you do before you came here today? Because, you know, I'm stalking you, so I'm just kind of curious. You know, like that. Like, I'm just seeing if you're going to lie. Like, all right, that could be a joke. Like, no, I'm just kidding. No, go ahead. But you have to clear it up. You have to kind of like wipe it off, you know? If you do joke, wipe it off. I'm just kidding. But seriously though, what did you do before you came here today? You have to get serious. Like, you can't just have it joking the whole time and go as she goes in. Because if you're joking while she's getting deeper, she will not go deeper. She will reserve herself and she will not go deeper at all. Period. Just will not happen. So you have to get serious. At some point, you have to decide to stop joking, of course. But while you're in the light rapport stages and after release, so if you are, you've just gone through the whole process and you're like, wow, it was a really deep emotional connection you just made, and now you're in the release stage, then you can release by being a little bit more lighthearted and joking a little bit, and then going back in the light rapport again, and then going through wide and going through deep again, if you want to. And that cycle is like the sort of magic cycle of love. So, to answer your question, Jonathan, directly, as a default, I would say, just if I were to make a blanket statement with no exceptions to it, you know, it's like off the top of my head, don't joke in light and wide rapport. If I had to say, if I didn't know who you were and I didn't know if you're going to be able to use it properly, I would say don't joke. But since I know that you're asking a lot of the right questions, I would say, yes, you can. It's sort of advanced. But you can joke a little bit in light rapport. As you go through wide rapport, though, I'd stop joking. And then once you go through deep rapport, there's absolutely no joking. And so you get to release, and you can kind of be playful a little bit. But keep in mind, too, once you've interacted with a woman the first time, once you have sexual tension present, you are currently in the stage of seduction. When you have sexual tension present, you're in seduction. Meaning that if you don't have sex with her, or if you don't kiss her or anything, but there's sexual tension, the next time you meet up, you're not in attraction. You're in relationship balance. And that's what a lot of guys don't know. So if you turn her on, you have to be willing to or ready to continue, because you're going to be bouncing between attraction, rapport, and seduction almost randomly after that. And if you're trying to push through in order every time after you've gone through the seduction stage, you're going to be too structured, and she'll begin to feel like she can figure you out, or that, you know, that is the relationship's kind of stale, and you don't want that to happen. Just because you haven't slept with a girl, or you haven't had the "what are we, you know, are we dating or are we just hooking up" kind of conversation, does not mean that you're not in a relationship, and that's really important. So. We'll talk more about relationship balance in a couple months here. I know we got that on the list of things to talk about, so we'll do that. But for now, though, I would say don't joke in rapport at all, especially the first time you go in rapport, because you'll be shifting straight from joking and being lighthearted and fun straight to rapport, deep connection mode, you know. And as soon as you skip over to that and you go into deep connection mode, that's whenever you got to be serious, and you got to be like, you're like a friend, a real friend, not some joking guy. Yeah. So that's the first one. Right. What's the next one, Brad?
We have another rapport question, so I'm going to take that one next, and it's from Seth. Mm-hmm. It says, can you build rapport through texting? What's the difference between texting a girl during the day rather than at night? And does one time make her feel like you are more a friend than a boyfriend?
Okay, so you can build rapport over text, but that's kind of like a is dirt edible question. Dirt is edible. You can eat it, but it's not going to be good for you. So you can build rapport over text, but it's typically a very bad idea, especially if you haven't already hooked up with a girl, especially. If you haven't had sex with or made out with a girl, I would not build rapport. Screw that. If you haven't had sex with a girl more than two times, I would not build rapport over text. And the reason why is because building rapport over text creates trust, but if there's no touch or tonality or any part of personality besides text that's involved, then She will not anchor that trust to you, meaning that it's meaningless. It will do nothing. So you can build it. Yeah, it will happen. She'll be in rapport, but she won't be in rapport and associated with you. It will not be rapport with you. So you don't want that to happen. The difference, so I would keep all text sexy or lighthearted and banter-like, always. Always. Unless you're in a relationship with somebody, and then, you know, then you get real. So whenever you're going through the earlier saying, another question was, is there a difference between texting during the daytime and during nighttime? Yes, there is a difference. And there's actually a difference between you texting her at her daytime, if you're in different time zones, at her daytime versus her nighttime, and then your daytime versus your nighttime. If you're in the same city or the same, you know, area, same time zone, then it's all about the same anyway. But yes, if you text a girl and it's night where she is, she's automatically going to be more guarded than she would if it was during the daytime, because she could be thinking that this might be a possibility that you're using this text as a way to open her up to get her to the place where she's ready to meet up that night for a booty call. And if she's not the kind of a booty call kind of chick, then you want to make sure that you disarm those conversations at nighttime, and that you say, hey, I'd like to hang out tonight, but I just can't. So, blah, blah, blah. Like, you take that away. I'm not going to be hooking up with you. Like, take that away from her. That way she'll continue to interact with you and she won't be scared. If it's during the daytime, you can actually push text a lot harder during the daytime. You can, like, you know, really get her, thinking sexy thoughts and stuff during the daytime, because it's kind of like a naughty pattern interrupt for her, you know? She's not used to it. She's like, well, you know, I wouldn't normally do this, but, you know, I'm going to go to the bathroom and take a quick picture of myself. Nothing too dirty, but she's at work. She goes to the bathroom, takes a picture, and sends it to you. You get to kind of, like, you know, bring out that naughty part of her that she can show you and only you. And that's really cool. That's really exciting during the daytime to do that, because she doesn't expect it during the daytime. And that's why it's good. So you got to keep in mind that we have associations with day and night. The reason why we go out to bars at night is because we all, just subconsciously as a species, when night comes, we automatically all think that we can hide things about ourselves. We think that people can't figure us out at nighttime because it's dark. You can't see as far. Physically, what we're surrounded with is darkness. And so our psychologically, we feel the same presence of a darkness around us. Like we have a shroud around us that's protecting us from being figured out, which is why we feel more strongly to go out to places and meet women at nighttime than we do during the daytime. Like, oh, I got to go out and meet some chicks tonight, because, you know, if you screw up at nighttime, it's not as big of a deal. You know, if you screw up during the daytime, it's like, oh, that's part of me. We have that association. It's really interesting that we do this as a species. I think that most other species actually have the same association, because it's at nighttime, there are nocturnal hunting animals. Nocturnal predators. And if you're prey for any of those nocturnal predators, then you have a different association with nighttime than you do during the daytime. And if you are a predator, you have a different association as well. So I would say, yes, the short answer is yes, there are different. At nighttime, your text should be a pattern interrupt unless you're going to sleep with her that night or hook up with her that night. You want to be a pattern interrupt, and you want to take away that theory that she thinks you're trying to get her in bed right now by doing this, by taking away the idea that you can hang out that night. Like, oh man, I'd love to hang out tonight, but I can't. What are you doing? You know, I can't because of blah, blah, blah. What are you getting into? Right? Then she'll be like, blah, blah, blah. She'll keep talking to you. She'll have a connection. She'll have conversations with you. Everything will be fine. Right? But if you're like, hey, what are you doing tonight? Out of nowhere, she's going to probably be more reserved. She'll probably be like, oh, I'm busy, because she doesn't want to feel like she's a slut, you know? That's important to her. So, anyway, that's that. Right, either?
Yep.
So, what was the last part of that question?
The last part was, are there certain texts that make her feel that you're more of a friend or a boyfriend?
Certain types of what?
Texts.
Oh, texts. And make her feel that you're more of a friend than a boyfriend. Yeah, of course. I really like you. Is a text that'll make her feel like you're more of a friend than a boyfriend. It's not actually, the boyfriend thing isn't the scary part. Her thinking of you like a boyfriend isn't a big deal. Her thinking about you like a nice guy is a bad thing. That's the scary thing. You know? So you don't want that to happen. A boyfriend is fine because she could, you know, she could hook up with a boyfriend. It's not a big deal. It's the nice guy thing that can throw everybody off. So, yeah, I really, things that sound needy. Anything that sounds needy over text is bad. Meaning, I really like you. I never met a girl like you before. I had a really good time last night is okay. No, that's fine. But I would let her say that, not you, you know. You can say, holy crap, I had a blast last night. That's different than I had a really good time last night. I had a really good time last night is like a thing you say after a date, you know. I think a girl says after a date, actually. Not a thing a guy says after a date, typically. So what you want to do is you want to stay in the banter, lighthearted, or sexual innuendo sort of phase and the text style. One of my favorite re-engagement texts, like a text where, you know, you haven't talked to her in a couple of days, or, you know, I haven't really had any deep conversation with her in a while, is like, you know, something that just says, if you have a pet name with her, like, say that she's, when you meet her the first time, you have some kind of a pet name, like you call her Cookie or something, you know, something really silly, or like Fancy Pants, whatever, right? If you text her back and you're like, how's Fancy Pants today? Like, that's fine. That's perfectly fine, you know? Referencing something that you talked about before that's lighthearted and fun and playful, that's all perfectly cool. But if you try to go further into the interaction and progress to rapport over text, you're going to run into a lot of problems. You're going to fall into the friend zone because she doesn't have that physical connection with you and that physical trust with you at the same time, which really will screw up an interaction. So keep that in mind. What's the next question there, Brad?
Next question we have from DL. He says, this is DL. in talking about body language, you say never bend at the waist. Don't bend over at the waist, excuse me. I don't see how this is possible. I am 6'3". If I do not bend, I cannot have a conversation in a noisy room. What am I not understanding about your instructions?
You don't bend over at the waist towards someone. That's the big distinction. So if you're bending over, you don't bend over toward her. You can bend over at an angle away from her or like at a 90-degree angle to her. Like if she's to your right and she's standing talking to your right, you can bend over forward, but you can't bend over to the right. Does that make sense? You don't want to bend toward the girl you're talking to. The reason why is because you'll come across like you're pecking, which is needy body language. You don't want to have needy body language like that. You want to have very non-needy body language. And the way that you do that is you make her meet you halfway. If you're 6'3", and Brad, how tall are you?
I'm exactly 6'3", so this question resonates with me.
Right. Okay, good. So if you are really tall, and women typically are pretty short, and they're like, you know, women that are like 5'4", you know, at a bar, typically, what you're going to want to do is if you bend over at the waist, you cannot bend and lean toward her because what you're saying is I'm not important enough to listen to. So I'm going to bridge the gap between my ear and your mouth so that when you say something, you don't have to try very hard. And that's not a very good message to send to somebody because it's a very needy statement. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So what you want to do instead is you want to bend at an angle and then point to your ear.
Yep.
As you're doing it, if you point to your ear when you bend, she will almost always lean in and start talking into your ear. And then this does two things. One thing it does is that it makes the girl who actually is leaning into you to talk to you, it makes her more attracted to you. The next thing that it does is it attracts every woman within eye shot. Because now everyone that's looking around looks at you and sees a girl climbing up you to talk into your ear. And that's a really attractive thing for women to see another woman do. Because it shows that you're really valuable. You have pre-selection like crazy. You know? Other women desire you. There's evidence right in front of them. They're looking at it. You know? And that's something that you want to show people. Because even if this girl, you point to your ear, even if, you know, she leans over and she talks to you and she says, I hate you. Leave me alone. I think you're creepy. Right? Everyone around you that sees that happen, all the women, they don't know that's what she said. They think she said, I want to fuck you in the bathroom right now. And you went, whoa, you know, buy me a drink first. And you walked off. You know, they don't know. They think that she was attracted to you because her body language was forced into that attractive body language process, that same mode. And women are looking at that and going, well, it looks like he's pretty good with women. You know, women seem to dig him. And that turns women on because you have pre-selection. So that's twofold, of course. You want to have – the reason why you want to only bend at the waist, not towards somebody, you know, usually forward, like, you know, not totally away either, because that's kind of strange. So you want to find somewhere between toward her and completely away from her and bend them in between there at that angle. So
I've never really had too much of a problem with girls, you know, even though if they're short, they're typically wearing heels and stuff, you know, like – you just kind of, like that, you know, pointing to your ear thing is awesome because they don't even think about what you're doing. They just kind of do it, you know, and.
Yeah, It's a pattern. So you get a pattern and she'll just follow you right into the pattern.
Like, yeah.
Without thinking about it at all. It just happens, you know.
And you can kind of still maintain interest in something else while she's, like, telling you all of her stories or whatever, you know.
Yeah, well, she's probably just playing along with your banter at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you are in rapport, you're not, none of this applies.
Right.
Because you're in rapport. When you're in rapport, all the body language, chasing body language, all the banter, all that stuff just dies. So you're not doing it anymore. So if you are in rapport, you're both leaning in toward each other. It doesn't matter. But if you're in a loud bar and you're talking to a chick you just met that you're being playful with, if you're leaning toward her, you're trying to go in rapport too soon. This is like a rapport body language, you know? And that kills the attraction. So you don't want to do that. If you're in the attraction phase and you're bantering and being lighthearted, which you should be in the beginning, then you want to make sure that you're showing your body language is completely congruent with that. That's what you're doing. You know? And especially, like, you know, here's another thing. Dude, don't be afraid of people hearing your voice. I mean, you can, in a loud bar, people can still hear you. You have to just speak from your diaphragm. You have to speak powerfully. And women will hear you. In the bar. You know, I know it's every guy that I know that has a problem with pecking, which is what that's called, when you're leaning over like a chicken, you know, trying to get closer so she can hear. That's called pecking, and every guy I know that has a problem with pecking all has the same excuse. You know, and that excuse is, oh, you know, I can't hear, it's too loud. You know? Well, there are two things. One is make her lean over and talk to you if you can't hear, but if she can't hear, talk louder. You know? I used to do this. If it was really fucking loud, like really loud, and I didn't want to scream or like, you know, I couldn't get loud enough, she kept saying, what, or something, I would just say, I'd put my hand up like I was about to tell her a secret with one hand. So I'd take my left hand up and I'd put it up like I was about to say a secret. And with my right hand, I would do like a come here finger move, right? Like, come here real quick. And she would come in and close the gap and put her ear next to my mouth. And I would start talking. And that's really powerful too. So if it's really loud, I would put my hand up like I'm about to tell her a secret, you know, right by my mouth, like I'm about to whisper something. I don't lean in at all though while I'm doing this. And then I tell her to come here with my other hand. And almost always she'll come in and she'll put her ear right next to my mouth. And she's coming like really close to me, you know, and getting really within my physical vicinity. And I tell her something, you know. So either way, you have to be the one directing everything. She can't be directing everything that you do. So, write that down.
Cool.
We're getting pretty close to the end of the call, or toward the end of the call now. So, I would like to get all the rest of the questions in and just answer questions from here on out. So, if you have a list of other questions, do you have any more, Brad?
Yeah, we have a few more.
Okay, so let's go through those questions, guys. Right now, if you have a question and you're on the phone, press *2 now, so we can know that you have a question and we can. Unmute it, and Brad will unmute it, and I'll be able to chat with you directly. But until then, while that's happening, while you guys are pressing *2 now, Brad, why don't you go ahead and read out the next question that's relevant.
Okay. This is another question from DL. He said, I went through the hacking program. I was pretty clear about the various components of it, except for if I have an internal or external frame. When I listened to the session, I felt certain I was internal based on the definition, but later I listened to one of the other videos and felt less certain. My other pieces are as follows: introvert, intuitive, thinker, judger.
INTJ, as I said?
Uh-huh.
Okay. All right. So, INTJs are very analytical, first off. So if you thought you had an internal frame and then later on you doubted it, that doesn't sound like something that a person who has an internal frame does. A person who has an internal frame doesn't really look for too much evidence to the contrary after they made a decision. Meaning that the way you typically figure out whether or not you have an internal frame is you'll say, okay, well, I know I've done a good job. Like, honestly, I know I've done a good job when either A, I look at it and say it's a good job, right? Or B, someone tells me I've done a good job, right? Now, here's the catch. If you look at it and say you've done a good job, and everyone else around you says, that's fucking terrible. That's not a good job. If you go, really? I didn't realize that. Okay, well, maybe it's a bad job. Then you don't have an internal frame. So it's kind of like if everyone else says that's bad and you say, no, this is good, and it's just you guys are all wrong, and that's really how you really are, then you have an internal frame. But if anything else happens besides that, if you take other people's opinions into account as to whether or not you've done a good job, then you probably have an external frame. So that might clear it up a little bit, DL, because that's kind of the biggest question for a lot of people is, you know, how can you really tell? And that is a difficult thing to understand. So the major problem is that most people who have an external frame look up to people who have internal frames, meaning that we all wish we had an internal frame because then we wouldn't care what people thought about us, you know? And that would be fantastic. But we also wouldn't be able to build a connection with anybody, which would be terrible. So you can't have sort of the good parts of both at the same time without really practicing and studying. You have to build up the weakness, whatever it is you are. So if you have an external frame, then, you know, you're looking for other people's, not approval necessarily, you're looking for other people's opinion about what you've done to formulate your own opinion about what you've done. If you have, and by the way, if you guys are listening and you haven't gotten the Hack and Attraction course, I highly recommend it. It's the most advanced attraction course, period, that's on the market. So if you want to get it, it's a mixture of personality typing and attraction in such a powerful way that allows you to find out what your natural style for attracting women is and allows you to play to that style and effortlessly attract women instead of trying to go against the grain, which is what we've been trained to do. So definitely check that out. You can email Brad at thedowelbadass.com. Again, Brad will get you hooked up with that and get you signed up for it if you want it. So, yeah, that's the way to tell. If you're overanalyzing it and you're not really sure, it's likely that you have an external frame. You know, most people, they want to have an internal frame, but I don't have an internal frame, you know? When someone writes me a shitty comment on one of my videos and I read it, I'm like, shit, man. You know, it sucks. It sucks. I don't like it. It bothers me. So I'm like, and people get to me and like not, of course I don't want to talk to that person or I don't respect that person at all if it's like really mean, but still it makes me doubt it. Like, for example, the first person who, if anyone's heard the recent interview with Alex Almond, you know, it was a phenomenal interview. Really, like, my favorite interview I've done. I've done satellite radio for years. I've done a lot of interviews with a lot of really brilliant people. And this is one of my favorite interviews I've ever done, ever. And the first comment I got when I posted it up, of course, I do these interviews for free, and I release them to everybody just as a gift, you know, and just to help us sort of further what we're doing. And I released it. The first comment I got was, what a worthless interview. That's what someone wrote. And my immediate thought was, holy crap, was it actually a bad interview and I didn't even know it? Like, that was my immediate thought. That's how you know you have an external frame, you know? Like, I thought that was a great interview. And so I was like, you know what, let me see if I can get some other opinions on this. And then other people started pouring in, and all of them, besides that one dude, all thought it was mind-blowing and amazing and beautiful, right? But this one guy was just being a dickhead, you know? And he wrote, what a worthless interview. It was the first thing that I saw, so I was like, shit, is this bad? Did I do a bad job? I don't know. So if that's how you feel and you're not really sure sometimes, and if people say, like, that's fucking terrible, you know, and you get that feedback, and you're like, well, was it terrible? Let me see. Let me figure out a little more about it, then you probably have an external frame. So keep that in mind.
It's a good description.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I have an external frame, and it's just sometimes I wish I could turn on my internal frame and just have an internal one, but I can't, you know. Part of the weakness that comes with the superpower here is that, yes, I can connect with women very, very powerfully and, like, see through them, you know, and like almost read their minds because I have an external frame. But when someone says, you're an asshole, I hate you, and I don't know who they are, I go, am I an asshole? You know, am I really an asshole? And I'll ask my other friends, do you think that I'm an asshole? You know, I won't go, hey, fuck you. I'll be like, oh, man, okay, well, whatever, you know. You're a dick, but let me see if I can ask my other friend. If they all say, yes, I'm an asshole, I'm going to look at that and go, okay, well, something's wrong with me, you know. I need to pay attention. So it's kind of the balancing act.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the next question you got?
We got another one from Jonathan. You know, Phil made a few comments here. Said he sent the question by email. I'm not sure where that is, Phil. I'm checking my email. I can't find it. So if you have that question, you know, you go ahead and send it again. But for now, we'll have Jonathan's question. He says, "Who should the conversation?"
Well, hey, Brad. Before you go on, if you did send an email, I've been away from email for the past almost 5 days.
Well, he said he sent it to me.
Oh, to you. Okay, cool.
Oh, maybe.
Well, maybe it was to me. Who cares? Either way, we'll be getting back into the swing of everything. Because Brad and I, of course, were on the Candy Cruise. And we didn't have internet on the Candy Cruise in the middle of the ocean. So, I'll be getting back in the swing of stuff tomorrow. So, should be able to get back to emails and respond back. But been a little bit back and forth lately, so it's been difficult.
Glad we got to meet up with a couple of you guys on the Candy Cruise as well. That was amazing.
Oh, it was fantastic. It was awesome. And a great lesson. We recorded it, and so I can't wait to see the video of that. Just really powerful stuff that we went over, so I'm really excited about it. And, of course, you know, being around, you know, more than 1,000 super, super hot chicks in the same boat, trapped on a boat with you, with a bunch of guys who have no idea what they're doing with women, is quite nice, you know?
Like, a little distracting.
Very, very good for your
yoga.
You know, I mean, it's like, it was us and a bunch of other dudes who were pretty desperate, you know? Just in general, the dudes that were on there just paid a lot of money to get on, and most of them paid trying to impress women, so they got really expensive rooms. So those guys were trying to impress women, and they weren't doing a very good job, so it was really great to see that, like, that ease of being able to go up and approach women and not have to worry about it. Just naked chicks everywhere. It was freaking awesome. So, anyway. Next year, guys. You can go on next year.
Definitely. Don't pass the next one.
Next year, we'll have more notice next year, too, so we'll be able to do it right and get you guys signed up and stuff for you know, better next year. So, anyway, so what was the question?
So the question is, who should the conversation be focused on during rapport? Should we be trying to get her to create love as well, or does that make us an empathizer?
Here's what will happen. Whenever you want to lead, then you want to let her just sort of do her thing, right? So what will happen, what you'll find is that while you're in rapport, as soon as you go through the process one time where you reveal yourself to her, it's like unplugging the drain. Like, all of her inhibitions just sink down out of the drain, and she just starts opening up like crazy, just talking about everything. And you'll notice that everything happens instantly after that. You don't have to worry about it. You don't have to try nothing. It just kind of happens to you. So in the beginning, the first thing you're going to do is you're going to make it about you. You're going to make it like, I don't know how it is for you, but for me, that's how I feel, blah, blah. You know, you're going to connect it all back, just like the deep core formula. And if you forget what that is, go into the Tao of Badass and into the actual, you know, into your Tao Badass manual, into the system, and go over the rapport section and the creating love section is what the subject is, chapter. And there's a deep rapport formula in there. Review it and practice it. But as you are going through that process, you'll go through it one time, and then she'll start to pick up, and she'll start to carry the conversation. So in the beginning, it's about you. Once you've gone through it one time, though, it's mostly about her. And then you got to really draw out more emotion from her. Like, oh, tell me more about that. That sounds amazing. So you're not being the empathizer. She is, still, but you're accepting her building rapport. So gender roles in this situation, gender roles, this is you giving her a gift. This gift is to allow her to be a woman, you know, meaning that she has the ability to draw emotion out of you, right, and to connect with you. That's what a woman wants to be able to do. So if you can allow her to do that, she'll feel fulfilled as a woman, right, in that moment. That's really what the goal is here. So So as you are talking, you're going to be talking to her, and you're going to be explaining your feeling, right, your report point. And then after that, she'll start to pick it up, and you can ask her questions, and she'll go into it, and she'll just dive right in. And then you're having a normal conversation. Just do whatever you think you want to do then. If you want to talk about something, talk about it. If not, you know, I don't want to talk about that really because I'll start to get emotional. Whatever, you know, it's perfectly fine. So that's what I would do. That's the way to do it. Typically people say that the conversation is 70% on the guy and 30% on the girl. That's all true until you get to rapport. Rapport, it's not the case anymore. It's about 50-50. So, but you'll find that she starts talking like crazy and really connecting and really thinking that you're awesome. So, and that's good. So, when you get that, that is good. Write it down. So, Brad, next question.
Okay. Jonathan is asking, do we always pick the unexpected topic every time we talk to the same person?
No. Only the first time you go into rapport. So if you're going to go into rapport, the very first time you do it, you pick the unexpected topic. After that, I would go for whatever's the easiest. But do not go into negative rapport. Again, if you guys don't know what I'm talking about, go into the Creating Love section of the Tao of Badass or go over the past few calls we've had and re-listen to those, review them. But the three different types of rapport topics are negative rapport topics, eager rapport topics, and unexpected rapport topics. Eager rapport topics are things that seem to be baited with emotion already, like, oh, what did you do today? Oh, I had an amazing sandwich. It was orgasmic, right? Okay, that's a baited response. It's got emotion already in it, right? That's an eager rapport topic. She's trying to get you to say, oh, let me talk about that, right? Now, negative rapport topics are things like, what did you do before you came here today? Oh, I had a really shitty drive over in this crazy-ass traffic and somebody flipped me off and it pissed me off and made me angry. All right, well, that's easy because a lot of guys go for that because it's like, oh, I hate people too. When people do that, that sucks. So we think that commonalities are rapport, but they're not. Commonalities are not rapport. So you don't want to do that either. The one you want to go for in the beginning is the unexpected rapport topic, like something that she did not expect you to talk about, that to build rapport on. And then after that, go into the eager rapport topics. And then after you've gone through a lot of eager rapport, other types of rapport, you can then start to tap into the negative rapport if you really want to, but I wouldn't do it too much because she'll start dumping all her problems on you, and then you'll have a really hard time.
Okay.
So, that's that.
And looks like one more question that we have right now, and it's also from Jonathan. He's going to town on these questions. It's really awesome. If a girl is attracted to you and you create love, will this make her want to be in a relationship with you even if she doesn't want to?
Yes. Well, here's the thing. If she doesn't want to in the beginning, afterwards, yes. But you're kind of, the question you're asking is kind of a catch-22 here. It's like saying, if she doesn't want to be in a relationship with you, and you go into rapport with her, will it make her want to be in a relationship with you? Yes, that's the truth. But if she doesn't want to be in a relationship with you, and you go into rapport with her, and then all of a sudden she does, then it's not that she doesn't want to. At this point, she's changed her mind, essentially. You know. So now she wants to. So that yes, that's how it works. If she doesn't want to be in a relationship with you, and you haven't built rapport yet. And you've been bantering and you've gone through attraction, this is important, you've got the attraction there, she doesn't want to be in a relationship with you, but she's got attraction for you, then going to rapport will make her want to be in a relationship with you. Monogamous or polyamorous or otherwise, I don't know, but, you know, you have to go through that process with her. So, but yes, you can, it will do that. That's something that it will do, which is nice. Is that it for questions for now, Brad?
That's the questions.
Alrighty, well, that's perfect because I got a split now anyway. So, perfect. This is a really great call. Thank you guys so much. Is anyone raise their hand right now just to check?
Yeah, sure. I've been checking. Nobody has anything to say.
No one's raising their hand?
No.
Guys don't raise their hand very much on the phone for some reason. if you ask a question like, can anybody hear me, raise your hand if you can, they'll all do it. But,
well, I was going to have a vote on, you know, whether we should institute a new policy of, you know, sharing a beer during Founding Members Club calls.
That could be good.
We could have gotten some
hands. As long as I'm not getting wasted, people probably don't care. In fact, I give really bad advice when I get drunk, dude. I give, like, the worst advice ever when I get drunk. It's ridiculous.
So, Franklin just raised his hand. I'm not sure if that's in agreement with the beer or he has a question. I'm going to...
Why don't you go ahead and click it so it lowers his hand. Franklin, if you have a question, press star 2 again, right after you click it off. Press star 2 again.
Okay,
now,
he's got a question.
Okay, cool.
Cool. All right.
I'll go ahead and open the line here.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Franklin.
Yeah, I have a... Yes?
Hey, what's up, man?
Hey. Quick question. So, at some point or another, I guess it will be during report that maybe one sticky subject may come up, you know, something that, you know, is not easy to talk about or something that you may think that potentially may turn off the girl. For example, you have been like divorced or you have kids or something and the girl is single and doesn't have any kids or anything like that.
Yeah.
So how would you deal with that? Or you just say straight up front and, you know, man it up or, you know, leave it for a better moment? What do you guys think about that?
Well, when you get into something that you could lose control over, like, you're about to talk about something that could make you cry. If that's going to happen, then you need to say, look, I'd like to talk about this, but I just feel like if I do right now, I'm going to lose it. I just don't think I can keep, you know, I don't think this is the place for me to do that. Like, I need to talk about it another time, you know? So if you think that you might cry because it's just a really emotional topic, then you got to put it off, you know? You don't want to do that until later, you know? It's not a big deal. I mean, you can cry in a relationship. That's not a big deal, but... Early on, you don't want to do that. If it's something that you think she's going to be turned off by, though, and it comes up, you've got to own it. You got to just talk about it. You know, I wouldn't bring it up yourself, though, Franklin. I would if she starts bringing it up and she starts asking questions, you got to be honest. You got to. But if it's something that's going to make you cry, you can be like, look, I don't want to talk about this right now because I don't think I can hold it together. You know, I'd really like to talk to you about it in a more intimate environment, but. You know, you're totally allowed to say that. Actually, I've said that to women before. Women I just met asked me something that's like the true answer is something really deep and like kind of like painful. I'd start talking. I go, you know, look, I would love to tell you more about this, but I can't do this in a bar. Like, this is just really intense for me. You know what I mean? And women have always been like, oh, no, it's completely fine and I understand and wow, it's really amazing. It's always been perfect whenever I do that. But before my natural response was to just blurt out, you know, what had happened, blurt out the truth or whatever, you know? And that was usually not a very good idea because I would either play down how important something was to me, and that's obvious, like, comes across like I'm making it seem like it's not a big deal when it's obviously a very big deal. Or it seems like I'm kind of dumping all my shit on her all of a sudden, you know? So in the stage report, if it's something like you have kids, like Franklin, you do have kids, don't you? Okay. So if it does come up and she's like, oh, do you have kids? You know, you need to find a way to say that. You know, that you practice. Like for example, the difference between saying yes, I have kids, versus, you know, I've been blessed with some of the most amazing. I had the most amazing kid or whatever. And I'm smarter having known, you know, having been around him and I wouldn't change it for the whole world, you know. The relationship's up over that I had, but I still love him or her or whatever, right? Whatever it is, I'd test different responses until you get one that gets a positive reaction from the woman, you know.
What Franklin told me about his daughter would probably work because I was like, I was enchanted.
Well, what was it?
It was basically what you're saying. You're just saying that.
Oh, right, okay.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, the thing is that whenever you have a situation that you think that when women find out, they're going to not be interested anymore, you know, like I said, there's a tendency to just blurt it out. Like, a lot of guys do that. That's a fucking terrible idea. But also, on the other side, if she brings it up and you think, oh, I really shouldn't say anything, or I really shouldn't bring this up or tell her because she'll be turned off. If she says, oh, you have a kid, I don't want to talk to you anymore, then good. You know, you just saved yourself a lot of time. You know, because if she's looking for a relationship and you're looking for a hookup, that's, you have different things in mind anyway, you know. And if she wants a relationship with somebody and she doesn't want to be in a relationship with a guy who's a kid already, then it wouldn't work out anyway. So you want to find out, you want to find a way to say it. You want to practice different ways of saying it, you know. Or you can even banter that. Somebody that's like, if she asks you if you have a kid and you want to give a slight banter response, I've bantered away some things like that because it's punishment, people. So if it's like a situation where I don't want to talk about it, I may make a quick banter line, drop a quick banter line, like, whoa, you know, like, you're already talking about having kids? I just met you. You know, that could be something that you do. But when you do that, again, you're punishing the girl for asking that question. So you got to keep that in mind. She could be really upset. If you're in deep rapport, you say that, that could be really bad. So that's my response.
Okay,
and it was awesome seeing you on the cruise, Franklin.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Can
I say something about that? When you said like a few weeks ago about, you know, people signing up for master class before the seminar,
mastermind,
that
yeah. Mm-hmm.
you come, you know, become your friend, and so I say, oh yeah, right. And I have to say, I had the best time ever hanging with you guys because, you know, I was testing that. Is he real when he says that, you know,
mm-hmm.
you are going to become my friend? Yeah, that's mm-hmm. that's nice customer, you know, interaction. But I had a good time because I really hung out with you, not only with you, mm-hmm. but with the rest of the crew. And
yeah.
I learned a lot from it, from the interactions. You gave me, you know, plenty of feedback on live interactions. It was amazing. Aside from that, you know, the cruise was fun. So I gotta encourage, you know, anybody who's still thinking about going to Vegas or not to do it because I got a lot out of it, a lot.
Awesome, man. Thank you so much for saying. That's rad. It's funny because I think a lot of guys probably are feeling the same way because the truth is there's a lot of liars that do what I do. There are a lot of liars. And they don't give a shit about people. They're just trying to make money. And I'm part of a movement. This is a movement for me. You know, and if you can't be friends with the people who are part of your movement, your brothers in the movement, then you can't be friends with anybody. You know? And the guys who are closest to me are those guys. I know because I've been doing this for, you know, a very long time. I've been doing it professionally for 6 years. And I know Brad, you were a student.
Yep.
You know? I mean, like, I know whenever I meet people that are my people and we're part of the movement, it's bigger than us. It's bigger than me, you know? This movement is bigger than me. So I'm really happy to be a part of it. And it's like, you know, you're a great guy, Franklin. I want friends. Like, I used to look at what I did for a living like I had a friend factory. Like guys would come in that are like kind of quirky, that have some issues, and like, you know, they're not quite confident. And then I'd go through a boot camp and they'd come out friends of mine that are like confident and cool. And like, I didn't want to hang out with them afterwards. You know, it was fantastic. I was making people into my friends for a living. You know, that was amazing. And of course, I was helping them with women in order to do that. That was my way of doing it. So I'm like, I love this stuff, man. That's why I don't use a fake name. That's why Joshua Pelletier is my real name. I didn't change it. I didn't spell it differently. Most of the guys that have that do this for a living have fake names. This is what they do. But I don't, because this is just who I am. So I really appreciate that you like that. I appreciate it more that you mentioned it even, because it's cool for other guys to hear it, you know, because they can hear it from me a million times. But it's cool to hear it third party, and I really appreciate that. I couldn't do what you just did, so that's nice. I appreciate that very much. So, that's good. We're all one big happy family.
Yay.
Yay! Kumbaya and all that shit.
So hopefully, yeah.
So,
you know, as many people as can make it to Vegas will sort of get that same experience, and we can get to hang out and get to know each other better.
Yeah, the mastermind. The mastermind's going to be big because I'll be able to spend really close quarter time with you. And I know that when there's a huge group of people in a big room of people, that I don't have as much time to spend. It's just not physically. I just don't have enough time and don't have enough energy to do that. But no, Mastermind Group is the day beforehand in Vegas. And if you can make it to that, that's limited seating. There's only 10 guys allowed in on that. So if you do want to do that, Brad, there are some seats still available, a few seats. So Brad is the man to get in touch with. If you do want to go to Vegas, sign up now and definitely sign up for the extra day so you can get that kind of extra coaching from me in a really personal manner in a really low-key environment. So email Brad at thedallasbadass.com. I'll get you set up for that. And that's it for today. I'm going to be in another call here the first Thursday of next month, which I'm not sure if I'm not in front of my calendar because I'm still in the car here. The first Thursday of next month, we will be having another founding members call. And it will be, there will only be two more founding members calls before we have the live event, the Attraction in Action event. And if you can make it out to Vegas, do it. We've got good deals on hotels. It's going to be at the Palms. You know, I'm really excited about it. I want people to show up. I want people to have a great time. And, I can't wait to get guys to see all you guys there and shake hands in person, you know. So really pumped. Thank you so much for hanging out at the founding members call today. If you have any questions at all, Brad's going to be sending out the replay and the way for you to submit your questions to the next founding members call as well, so that you can get your questions in ahead of time and get them answered first. As you notice, I answer the first questions that come in first. So if you want to get your question answered for sure, you can do that. Is it next Thursday or Thursday after that, Brad? Do you have your calendar in front of you?
It would be next Thursday.
Next Thursday, okay.
It's not on the calendar yet, but...
Not yet, but it's definitely when we're having it. So, till next Thursday, you guys take care, practice this rapport stuff, really get good at it, and I'll talk to you then. Peace, brothers.